someday.
Singer Andy Williams, best known for his rendition of Moon River, his Christmas TV specials, and his long-running show in Branson, Missouri, has died. He was 84. The famed singer passed away last night at his home in Branson, Missouri, following a year-long battle with bladder cancer. We spoke with Andy Williams in 2009 about his life and career. He spoke to us then about at what point he realized that music and show business would become his life.
Well, I didn't start off thinking it was going to be that because I was a kid. You know, I started when I was 7 years old singing with my brothers. And at that time, you just do what you're told. So it wasn't until I had great success with my brothers and Kay Thompson in a really whirlwind kind of nightclub act for about 5 years that just startled everybody and making quite a bit of money.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling.
Broke up because my brothers wanted to do other things. We'd always been together. My brother Dick wanted to sing with the band, and he wanted to do different things. And my older brother Bob wanted to get out of the business entirely, and he went into real estate and insurance and stuff with my father. And I was 24 years old, and I didn't know what to do. That was the difficult decision to make, but I didn't have any choice because that's all I knew how to do. I had a high school education, and here I'm 24 years old, and the only thing I know is singing. So I went off and tried to do it alone, and it was really difficult, very, very hard. And so for 3 or 4 years, I wanted to stop several times and just say, why am I doing this thing? You know, nobody's paying any attention, nobody cares, and they're throwing bottles at me and things. What am I doing? And my father had instilled in us that, don't give up, never give up, otherwise you won't succeed. We got to work harder.
Is that what kept you going? Because you write about in the early 50s, this period, you hit this low point, and you describe in the book being so poor you were forced to skip meals and stay at seedy hotels and freeze your suits because you couldn't afford to have them pressed.
So I couldn't sit down in my tuxedo because I couldn't afford to have them pressed. So I, in between shows, sometimes I did 3 shows a night in these little clubs. I'd sit sometimes in the locker room. I mean, the cold locker room where they have the meat. Sit in there and kind of freeze my ass, but my suit was pressed. Sometimes a little hard to get on, but it was looked pretty damn good when I got it. And I was, at one point I had a dog with me, a boxer, and I didn't have enough money so I bought enough dog food for the two of us. So I ended up eating dog food for a couple of days, but it was pretty good. Alpo, and it had gravy and big chunks of meat in it. Horse meat, I'm sure, but.
At what point did your fortune start to turn and you knew everything was going to be all right?
When I got on the Steve Allen Tonight Show. It had just started this whole thing about the Tonight Show and the Today Show. Sylvester Weaver, who was the head of NBC at that time, decided to start a Today Show, a home show in the afternoon, and the Tonight Show at night. And they were going to have Steve Allen as the MC and the host. And I got on that, so I alternated with Steve Lawrence, who was the other singer on the show. And Edie Gourmet was on it. And then there was another girl and me, and we would alternate with Steve and Edie. So I was on 2 nights 1 week and 3 nights the next week. And that was for like 2.5 years, and I learned about television during that time and some sketches and skits and things that I was in with Steve that, you just throw at you the last minute and say, okay, you're a Russian bartender. In this thing. So you did, not much rehearsal, you just do it. But I learned about camera work and what you should do and what you shouldn't do and what works best for you. The less you do on television, the better. You don't want to wear yourself out. When the camera's in close to you anyway, it's just showing your face and sometimes just the torso, and sometimes it'll show a full figure, but it's a lot different than getting out and performing on the stage. And I learned all that, and then when I got my own show years later, it was very comfortable for me.
The Andy Williams Show was an Emmy Award-winning variety show, 1962 to 1971. And it was such a comfortable show and an enjoyable program to watch. The goal for you each program was to accomplish what?
Well, just to do the best show that I could possibly do, and I worked very hard. Part of that work ethic that my father instilled in me. And I found that I could be really natural and really relaxed if I knew what I was doing. So I knew what I was doing backwards and forwards by the time the show went on, which meant that I had to work, you know, like 6 days a week and really learn it and really learn the numbers that we were doing and the dance steps and do all that stuff. When the show would finally go on and we'd tape it, well, it was done live, but it was done on tape. I knew what I was doing enough so I could be very comfortable and very relaxed.
It's my observation. Wait, fellas, wait a minute. Dave, can you wait a minute? I know this may be a little unusual, but, you know, every time we have singing guests on the show, mm-hmm. like you two, the singers do the songs that they want to do. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought the folks, the viewers at home, they never get a chance to hear guys like you sing songs that they want to hear.
Ah. Well, it's a lovely thought, but it's awful hard to do.
No, not really, not really. Eddie, could I have the phone, please? Will you bring it out here? Thank you.
Well, what are you going to do, Andy?
Well, I have set it up with the NBC operator, mm-hmm. and the number's been given out, and people from all over the country are going to call in and tell us the songs that they want us to hear.
They
want to hear
kidding?
Us sing. Yeah.
What? The switchboard will be flooded.
Of course. There'll be millions of people fighting to get through. It'll be bedlam all over the country.
Well, wait a minute.
Things will be torn up, the lines.
All right. Can't we try it once? Let's give it a chance.
All right.
All right. We're ready, operator. Will you put the calls in? Yeah, thank you.
Not even a slow leak.
Operator, is this phone working? It is working. No calls? Well, is there anything you'd like to hear? You really know how to hurt a guy, don't you? What a grub. Huh? My show, my show. Andy Williams here. Oh, Bobby, it's for you.
Hello, this is Bobby Darin, maker of Hit. Yes, yes.
I'm Dr. Fredericks, and I'm calling from Pasadena.
Hey, I got a doctor on the phone.
I'm a dentist.
Oh, he's a dentist.
I've been enjoying your performance, Mr. Darin, and every time you open your mouth to sing, I'm fascinated.
And, of course, there was singing, but there was also you could be the straight man, you'd be the comedian. I mean, there were other aspects of you that we saw on that show.
Yeah, and some of that I learned with Steve Allen, some of that I learned with Kay Thompson and my brothers when we worked clubs. And just being on television and seeing how it works, and I got very involved in the scripts and in the technical part of it, and I could really pretty much produce my own stuff by the time we finished.
Why do you think that especially the Christmas specials, became such an integral part of our culture?
I guess because it was all my family and the people who liked the show loved to see my children from 1 year to the next and see how they've grown, And we do duets sometimes with my daughter and sometimes with my son or one of the boys. And my brothers were on it, and my mother and father were on it, my sister, some nieces and nephews. You know, it was but a very family kind of get-together. And it was done very well. And people enjoyed it. People liked it.
Hey, I'm glad to see you fellas are business-minded.
Yeah.
If you're smart, you'll stay with this and forget show business.
Oh, well, we're just doing this to pick up a little extra money.
Yes, we're going to stay in show business.
Hey, wait till you see our eye show tonight.
Oh, yeah. You're making a big mistake. You fellas will do just fine singing, but then one day one of you is going to leave the act and go out on his own. And then what's going to happen to the rest of the brothers?
Every year I'll invite them on my Christmas show.
Every year they're going to invite the rest.
I don't see anything so funny about that.
Put her there, pal.
Happy holidays. While the merry bells keep ringing. Happy holidays to you. Happy holidays. Happy holidays. It's the holiday season.
Holiday time.
And Santa Claus is coming round. The Christmas snow is white on the ground. When old Santa gets into town, he'll be coming down the chimney down.
He'll be coming down the chimney down.
And it just grew and grew and grew to where it became the most popular part of the television series. Our ratings always were higher on the Christmas show than they were the other shows. And I find the same thing when I'm here in Branson, Missouri. We do well all the time, But when it gets to be Christmas time and we do the Christmas show, it suddenly is, everything is full. You know, and it's a large theater. I mean, it's comparatively large. It's a little over 2,000. We do two shows a day. So when you fill it up, you know, you're reaching a lot of people.
Andy, I have to ask you about the title, of course, Moon River. There's a wonderful picture in the book of you singing with a big smile on your face, and to the right is Henry Mancini sticking his tongue out at you.
I love that picture.
It's a great picture. Now, here is a man that you had a wonderful musical partnership with, and I'm just hoping you can share a little bit about the two of you and why you think his music suited your style so well.
Well, the songs that I recorded of his, many of them had the lyrics by Johnny Mercer. The melodies that I think Mancini is one of the great melody writers of all. He and Irving Berlin. There are other greats too, but he is outstanding. And Johnny Mercer lyrics are never right on the button. I mean, they're abstract. You know, like Moon River, whiter than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. You dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way. What does that really mean, you know? Kind of abstract. I mean, there's no Moon River, really. Not whiter than a mile.
Mm-hmm.
So the lyrics are timeless. You know, they don't say Moon in June. And another one would be like Charade. When they played our Charade, we were like children posing, playing at games, acting out names, guessing the parts we played. What does that really mean?
And when you look at a song like, especially Moon River, which becomes your signature song, everyone expects you to sing it when you go out on that stage, and it becomes part of the performer that you are, I assume that that is a blessing to have a song like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to have I Left My Heart in San Francisco means a great deal to Tony Bennett, because that's the one that comes to mind when they think of Tony Bennett. And the same thing with Moon River. I mean, you don't want to be associated with Itsy Bitsy Polka Dot Bikini all your life. Because, you know, it's not quite the same as a great song like Moon River. I'm not putting it too busy.
Not putting it down.
Putting it down as a great piece of material, but it's much better to have a little better quality song associated with it.
Since it is identified so closely with you, do you think it's some of your best work?
Yeah, I do. I think it's the way that I do it now is slightly different than the record version, which Henry Mancini wrote for me. Because he has an arrangement on it, and when we worked together in concert, I always loved his thing much better than mine. So I asked him if I could steal the ending and do all that stuff that he did, and he said, sure, go ahead. He was really a good friend of mine. We worked together a lot and recorded, you know, several of his songs and had hits with several of them. Moon River and Wine and Roses and Charade. Well, that one where I was singing where he was sticking his tongue out, I don't think that was Moon River we were doing. I think it was In the Arms of Love, another one of his songs.
Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, he was a wonderful man. I loved him.
As you say, you know, still performing. How did you come to Branson? 1992... The place was just starting to become popular, known as a country music destination. How did you find it?
I found it through my brother Don, who was a manager at that point. He managed, you know, a lot of people like Ray Stevens and Roger Miller and Jack Jones, and he was handling Ray Stevens. But he said that Ray Stevens was opening a theater here, and he said, you've got to come down. I said, it's all country, but they have 4 million visitors a year. And there are about 20 theaters. And I think, you know, even though you're not country, people have seen you on television, whether they're country fans or not. And they bought your records, I'm sure. He said, so come down and take a look. So I did. And then I decided that he was right, that I could try it. So I built a theater, built a beautiful theater, and decided that I was going to come down here and live, build a house, do the whole thing, and open up, and he was right. They did come. And then other people like the Osmond Brothers called and said, how do you think we will do? I said, great, come in. And Bobby Vinton called me, and Tony Orlando called me, and Wayne Newton, all guys that I think were ready to get off the road and have a theater that they could stay in and have people come to see them. And it's just built and built and built up until the last year when the economy became so bad. It became bigger and bigger, and there are 8 million people now coming.
Mm.
But like Vegas and like a lot of destinations for entertainment, it's had its problems this last year.
And also, you mentioned the Osmonds, who have a theater in Branson. You were certainly very influential in the early days of their career and introducing them on your program. Did you have a special soft spot for them and their situation, given they had a similar career path in that it was a family business and they started very, very young, as you and your brothers
did? They were the same age as my brothers and I were when we started. Donnie wasn't around then. You know, in 1993 when they came on, I think. Jay was the youngest, and then it wasn't until about 3 years later that Donnie came on, and he was 4.
Let's do the one we rehearsed.
Okay.
This little girl is the youngest Osmond brother. No, she's their sister, Marie. Marie, thank you for the dance, Marie. Okay. Will you save me a dance on your 18th birthday?
Okay.
Yeah. You better make it a slow one, because by then, I'm liable to be about 32 years old. I'm sure that you fellas can be trusted to see this young lady home safely, huh?
Oh, yes, sir.
Will you take care of
her? They were very close to me. It reminded me very much of my brothers and their careers paralleled ours. And then they finally got a hit record with One Bad Apple, and then by that time they were ready. You know, they had been on my show now for 6 years, and they had worked with the choreographers and taught them how to dance, how to tap dance, how to do anything. And then they got more modern singing coaches from the George Weil, who was a vocal guy on our show. And they could do anything.
Andy Williams speaking to us in 2009. Andy Williams passed away last night at the age of 84. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Oh, what a hit we made. We came on next. To closing, best on the bill, lovers until love left the masquerade. Fate seemed to pull the strings, I turned. And you were gone. While from the darkened wings, the music box played on. Sad little serenade, song. I hear it still. I